Hi, I'm Mike Dilk and you're listening to the Relax Back UK show, the show that explores all kinds of health topics relevant to you, your family and your friends. Each week I talk to expert guests from a range of backgrounds to inform and entertain you. So please do join the Relax Back UK family and stay tuned.
Hi, and thank you for joining me on the Relax Back UK show. My guest is Professor Kevin Tracy. He's President and CEO of the Feinstein Institutes of Medical Research, and he has some pretty extraordinary news in the world of bioelectronic medicine.
The FDA in the United States approved a new device, a nerve stimulator placed in the neck on the vagus nerve, based on this idea, based on our science. The FDA approved this device now to treat rheumatoid arthritis. So we're kind of at the beginning of a new era.
Hear what the science is, hear what the idea is in this fascinating story that can potentially help an awful lot of people. Please join me for a great show. Thank you. Before I spoke with Professor Tracy, I watched his TED Med talk, and in it he said he was a neurosurgeon and also a researcher into the immune system, and that this was kind of a strange combo. So my first question to him was, what made him say that, and what made it come about?
I am a neurosurgeon. I describe myself as recovering now. I retired from clinical practice. But I have never retired from my curiosity in science about how things work. And a series of events with patients and personal experiences drew me into a career pursuing mechanisms, how to understand how inflammation works. So that I've been doing since the 1980s. And that combination, in retrospect, turns out to be important because most of my work now is looking at the intersection of how the nervous system, the brain and nervous system, have the capability to turn off inflammation. And just a few weeks ago, Mike, the FDA in the United States approved a new device, a nerve stimulator placed in the neck on the vagus nerve, based on this idea, based on our science. The FDA approved this device now to treat rheumatoid arthritis. So we're kind of at the beginning of a new era based on an unusual combination of neuroscience and immunology.
Right. Well, let's dive into that specific bit, because obviously that's very topical. Just been approved a while ago. This is probably an impossible question, unfair question, but I'll kind of ask it anyway to give a short answer. So your discovery really of the information reflex really led to people being treated with devices for this, like this rheumatoid arthritis, this thing that's just happening. Can you give kind of a potted version of how you got there?
The short answer is we were experimenting in the lab and came across an observation we didn't expect and couldn't explain, whether it was serendipity or good fortune, or we couldn't explain what we saw. What we saw was that when we had put an anti-inflammatory molecule into the brain of mice and rats with a stroke, we saw less inflammation in the brain. That's what we fully expected. And the strokes were smaller, and that was good. That's why we were doing the work. What we couldn't explain, and what came as a real surprise, was that when we put this very small amounts of this anti-inflammatory molecule in the brains of these animals, not enough to leak out into the body, but this very small amount of material somehow turned off the inflammation throughout the body of the animal. And this was the sort of inexplicable surprise. So we worked on this for many, many months. And you could actually argue that I've been working on it with my colleagues in the lab for the last now 25 years. But suffice it to say, after many months of work, we discovered that what was happening is that the molecule in the brain was somehow, we didn't know how, now we do, we didn't then, was somehow activating the brain's nerves, the neurons in the brain, to send signals down the vagus nerve. And we could talk about what the vagus nerve is, but for now, the answer is the discovery is the vagus nerve is like the brakes on your car, which slows down inflammation. And that discovery changed everything for us. And that's what we've been working on for the last 25 years. And that's what led directly to starting a company to do the clinical trials. And the company Setpoint Medical built the device that recently received this FDA approval.
So, but this research has already helped thousands of people with rheumatoid arthritis.
Not thousands yet, Mike. No, the clinical trials of using vagus nerve stimulation to treat rheumatoid arthritis, that is relatively new work. I estimate there's probably been 400 or 500 people treated worldwide so far with either rheumatoid arthritis or Crohn's disease, some in Europe, in the Netherlands, in Bosnia, in Croatia, and in Sweden. In the United States, there's been about just under 300 people, 250 or so people treated with the device. These patients all had severe rheumatoid arthritis. They were not responding to the currently available drugs, which of course are all immunosuppressing. And the question was, if we implanted a device called an immunoregulator on their vagus nerve, could their symptoms improve without any immunosuppression? And the answer is yes.
Okay. So what does this device look like? Is it actually implanted kind of under the skin, or, you know, what is it, a big thing or?
It's a small thing. It's about the size of a multivitamin or a fish oil pill, and it is implanted under the skin through an incision about an inch or an inch and a half long. It's implanted in the left neck at about the level of your Adam's apple. Once it's implanted, it's down deep in your neck, so you can't see it or feel it or touch it anymore. It's implanted once for life. The device has a rechargeable battery. It has a circuit board, an ASIC. It has an antenna, which communicates with a doctor's tablet. And it has the leads, which touch the vagus nerve. The vagus nerve is a bundle of nerves in your neck. So the device is wrapped in a soft silastic case that wraps around the vagus nerve. It's almost like a pea in a pod when it's all done.
All right. Actually, putting that in place sounds like a very skilled operation, because presumably you've mentioned the vagus nerve a couple of times. You know, this is a very delicate thing. You know, you're chopping a hole in someone and sticking this thing in. You don't want to slice through the vagus nerve.
It's a very delicate operation, but it's done very, very safely. And the good news there, Mike, is that there's been 40-year clinical experience by neurosurgeons implanting devices on the vagus nerve. It can be done very, very safely. Okay. In fact, it's been used, as I said, for 40 years to treat epilepsy in the U.S. and in Europe and other countries around the world, as well as depression. And so the experience and the follow-up with this, we know about safety. For instance, there's one study followed patients for 30 years, looked at 250,000 patients, and the complications rate of the surgery itself, it is a delicate surgery, but it can be very safely done through a very small incision. Unless the wound gets infected, or unless there's some inadvertent injury to one of the other structures in the neck, you're looking at complications rate under 1 or 2%. When you look at the complication rates of the currently used drugs to treat rheumatoid arthritis, they're many orders higher than that. Okay. All of the biologics used to treat rheumatoid arthritis and the JAKs as well, the pills, these drugs have black box warnings, which is the most serious complication risk the FDA can issue. These warnings include immunosuppression, sepsis, cancer, and other complications. In the United States, there's a lot of advertising of these on TV, and you can hear it every night on the news or on the Sunday football games. And the lawyers at the end have written into the ad this lengthy explanation of this can happen, this can happen, this can happen, this can happen. Those things don't happen with vagus nerve stimulation with the surgery or the follow-up therapy.
That's good to know. Let me ask a question, which comes more from, because I'm an engineer, from an engineering point of view. How do you recharge the battery? Is it like, because now you can get to recharge your mobile phone, you can get these things that you just place it on a pad and it recharges. Is it kind of similar technology?
Very similar. All of this, there's some nice pictures and diagrams on the SetPoint Medical website. As I said, this work was done by the company, not by my lab. But it's exactly as you said. Rather than put your take the device out of your neck, which you can't do, and put it down on your charger, instead, there's a charging collar that you put around your neck. And once a week or so, that fully recharges the battery. What's really important from an engineering point of view is that we discovered, again, after many, many years of work by dozens, if not hundreds of people, we discovered that the fibers that turn off inflammation are exquisitely sensitive to being stimulated. So what does that mean? Well, it means you have 100,000 vagus nerve fibers on each side of your neck. The device only sits on one side, but it only fires for 1 minute a day at about 400 microamps, which is a vanishingly small amount of power, of current, of electricity. These spikes at 400 microamps, these spikes go into the nerve. Because it's such a low amount of current, a low power, only a small fraction of the 100,000 vagus nerve fibers next to the device, called an immunoregulator, only a few thousand of those fibers are actually activated. It could be less than 1,000. We don't know exactly for sure. But those are the fibers that are necessary and sufficient to turn off inflammation.
That was going to be my next question. How this kind of device, how long is it on for? And is it done by a timer?
It is. It's fully programmable. So it's adjustable through the doctor's tablet. When you go see your doctor, they could turn it off or turn it. Right. But as of now, the settings that have been approved by the FDA and it showed a success in a large clinical trial in the United States is 1 minute a day. Now, why? How does that work? Why is it only 1 minute a day?
Well, seems very little.
It seems very little. You're absolutely right. But what we discovered is that the signals travel down the nerve for that 1 minute. But the first thing that happens is when they arrive at their destination near the spleen, they activate hundreds, if not thousands, of more signals from other nerves that perfuse the spleen. Those signals activate thousands and potentially millions of white blood cells called lymphocytes, which release another molecule called acetylcholine. And that's all happening in the spleen. It's the acetylcholine that's switching off the inflammatory cells in the spleen. And we can measure the acetylcholine coming out for hours and hours. So it's a massive amplification. Biology works that way. You can get feed forward amplification of a signal. And that's what seems to be happening from this 1 minute signal being converted into a long time response. And what's really interesting is once the white blood cells that cause inflammation, called monocytes, once they're switched off by the acetylcholine, they remain switched off for 12 to 24 hours, but they're not neutralized. They can still do their job to fight infection. You're not immunosuppressed. That's the beauty of it.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Is there a way, and it may be in the future, or perhaps this is happening now, I don't know, where there's some kind of feedback loop where you can measure the acetylcholine, and if that's not quite what it should be, it can send a signal back to this device and start giving you a little, I'd say a little shock. That's not really quite what I mean, but you know what I mean. Stimulating the vagus nerve.
We have openings in the lab, Mike, if you're looking for another gig, because that's a great research question. That would be called a closed loop signal, where if you knew how active the pathway was, how much acetylcholine was actually flowing, you could close the loop on a device that could either turn itself off or turn itself up with more power. The trick to that is we don't know what to close the loop on. Should we close the, first of all, we don't have the devices. In the lab, you can do that with experimental devices in mice and rats, but we don't have those devices for humans yet. Second of all, in the lab, what you'd have to do first is decide what to close the loop on. Do you really want to close it on acetylcholine, or do you want to close it on the cytokines, which are being made by the white blood cells, things like TNF and IL-1, which are actually the sort of the molecular mechanism of action. Actually, that would be the target to stop inflammation, as you want to reduce the TNF and reduce the IL-1. So those kind of experiments are being banted around by a lot of people to close the loop. But to my knowledge, no one has succeeded yet. And there's a lot of work to do.
Okay. I do love this stuff, but I'm not a medical person. So, but in some ways, that allows me to ask the stupid question. So I've got many more stupid questions coming up, which I'll hope you'll be patient with me. The next one is I know that people feel pain at different amounts. And my wife always says this, you know, essentially says, God, you men are useless. You know, you get ill and you lie up in bed and you complain. Us women, you know, we can take the pain. And to a large extent, I think that's true. Different people feel pain differently. So there could be a gender gap, a gender difference. There's certainly one for age, maybe for ethnicity as well. Can you take this into account, or have you noticed kind of differences, these sorts of differences in essentially stopping pain for rheumatoid arthritis?
That once again is an outstanding question. It's not a stupid question. And once again, I can remind you that there's lots of laboratories looking for people to ask the right questions, which you seem to be doing very well today. So kudos for that. The question of pain. Look, any question of cause and effect in medicine or biology requires certain levels of proof, and it requires certain levels of reducing a complex syndrome like pain, which involves peripheral receptors in your hands, in your body, in your organs, in your hands and feet. In the case of rheumatoid arthritis, it involves signals in nerves. It involves those signals arriving in the brain. It involves your emotional response to those signals, which may be different than your intellectual response to those signals. So where do you begin with something like pain? You have sort of a series of questions that people are approaching from many different angles. Some people approach your question from the pain receptors in the nerves and the joints. Some people approach the question of pain from how people respond to pain, presumably after the signals get to their brain. Other people are looking at how the signals travel up and down the spinal cord. So there's no simple answer to your question. What we have seen and what has been studied in some detail, and this is actually just within the last year or two, is we've seen that vagus nerve stimulation, here focusing primarily on stimulating nerves that travel up into the brain as opposed to stimulating the nerves that travel down into the immune system, that if you time the signals going up into the brain with steps in rehabilitation, and this has been shown now for two scenarios, one for rehabilitation from people who have a stroke and paralysis affecting or weakness affecting their arms and hands. If you time that signal with the therapist's instructions and the therapist's techniques, the signals traveling up the vagus nerve enhance neuroplasticity, which means the brain is being encouraged to form new connections and new networks. And this leads to better therapy, better strength and use of the arm. So that's quite remarkable. And this is FDA approved in the United States. So if you have had a stroke affecting the arm, I think this is going to be extended to other body parts at some point going in the future. But right now, the FDA approval is for the arm. There are patients getting an implanted device in their neck to stimulate their vagus nerve so that their therapy is more effective by enhancing neuroplasticity. Very similar thing has been observed, actually, in a very compelling new study. It's not FDA approved yet, but I think it will be someday, for treating post-traumatic stress disorder, which of course is a big problem worldwide. And that patients who were using sort of a computer guided or an app guided therapy, when the therapeutic intervention, when the responses, the patient responses were timed with a vagus nerve stimulator that was firing in that time, they had a 100% improvement in their PTSD. You never see a clinical study with 100% improvement. This was a really dramatic finding that just was out a few months ago. So what about pain? Well, some component of pain, and there's a lot of evidence, experimental evidence for this, some pain syndromes can be improved when neuroplasticity is enhanced. So that's number one. That would be a plausible scientific mechanism based on sort of reductionist thinking of neuroplasticity contributing in some patients to their pain syndrome. And that can be potentially enhanced by vagus. It's not proved yet, but okay. that would be a path forward. But there's another one. There are clinical observations, even in the patients in the current clinical trials that have been completed for rheumatoid arthritis treatment with vagus nerve stimulation. Many of those patients have described less pain in their joints. Even in some of the, it doesn't work in everybody, of course. No therapy works in everybody, but in some of the patients had less pain, even though it didn't seem from a clinical examination that their inflammation was reduced. Some patients had dramatic reductions in their inflammation. And some patients by MRI scan also had enhanced healing or decreased progression of the disease. So there were dramatic effects, but a few patients actually noticed that the biggest response to the therapy was less pain. So we don't know, Mike, it's an important question. And a lot of people are studying the relationship from vagus nerve stimulation and pain.
Very interesting. I mean, the thought I had is very basic, and that, you know, if you just feel a bit crummy, you know, a bit exhausted, and you have a neck rub, often you feel a bit better. Now, can that in some small way be doing a similar thing? You know, if you have a nice neck rub, will that stimulate the vagus nerve at all, make you feel better all over?
Maybe. I think the issue there is, what type of neck rub? Is it sufficient to stimulate the vagus nerve? The vagus nerve is very far down in your neck. It's down next to your carotid artery, the pulse you feel in your neck. If you rub the neck vigorously enough to stimulate the vagus nerve, you really have to be careful of the carotid artery. Older patients might have plaque or atherosclerosis in that carotid artery. Rubbing the carotid artery in some patients can actually cause a stroke. So you have to be very careful about these kind of things. I think a casual back of the neck rub is not likely to stimulate the vagus nerve. It is stimulating other nerves, and it is stimulating relaxation responses.
And it does feel nice.
It does feel nice. See, the problem with look, there's billions, not millions, billions of web impressions and social media posts about the vagus nerve. You do this, that, or the other thing to stimulate your vagus nerve, and all will be right with your world. And so when someone asks me, what's the best way for me to stimulate my vagus nerve? I say you have 100,000 vagus nerves, fibers on each side of your neck. Which one do you want to stimulate and how? it gets very complicated very quickly. So that's on the technical side. On the understanding side, we've already sort of scratched the surface of that when we talked about the fact that, a few thousand at most, maybe less, fibers are sufficient to switch off inflammation. What are the other 197,000 vagus nerve fibers doing? Well, they're doing everything that you don't think about all day long. They're controlling your heartbeat. They're controlling your breathing. They're controlling how your kidneys and your intestines and how your pancreas is working and how your glucose is doing and how your insulin is doing. So all these signals are traveling up and down in the vagus nerve. And these signals are keeping your organs in balance. I wrote about this in my book recently. It's called The Great Nerve, and it's been out a few months, and it's doing pretty well, actually, because there's so much interest in this. But at the end of the day, when you talk about stimulating your vagus nerve by humming, for instance,
Heard that one.
Oh yeah, just Google it. You'll be blown away.
I'd rather not, to be honest, because a lot of this stuff upsets me.
Well, the problem is there's a grain of truth to it, and then there's a giant black box. So, in the example of humming, so there's a branch of your vagus nerve, a few thousand fibers or less, that comes off at the level of your Adam's apple, and it's called the recurrent laryngeal nerve, and it innervates your voice box, your Adam's apple. And it's really important to control vocalization. So when you hum, or even when you just speak, you're actually sending signals up and down that branch of the vagus nerve, the recurrent laryngeal nerve. Does that mean that when you hum, you're also turning signals on that turn off inflammation, or that you are turning on signals that control your insulin or your glucose or all the 200,000 fibers? I don't think so, because I can walk and chew gum at the same time. And the reason you can do that is because individual nerve fibers have individual job descriptions and individual anatomical routes and paths. And so it's fine to say that when you hum, you're stimulating that branch of your vagus nerve. It's not fine to then extrapolate that to a whole litany of healthy outcomes because of that. We just don't know.
Let me ask a question which kind of stems from that a little bit, really. The vagus nerve does a lot of things, as you just said, and there's gazillions of fibers, and you're stimulating a few of them, and it seems to have this good effect. Is there a chance that actually there could be some side effects that you're not quite sure about, because the vagus nerve does so much stuff? The sort of things that we don't think about, the breathing and the digestion and those sorts of things. Could it kind of send some of those things a little bit off?
No, we know that it won't already, Mike, because of what we talked about earlier, that over the last 40 years, vagus nerve stimulation has been used to treat, I estimate, several million patients worldwide. And we know that it's safe. We know that it doesn't have off-target effects. What some patients notice, I call it the Generation 1, the Gen 1 devices, which are most widely used to treat epilepsy and depression. And they're like cardiac pacemakers. There's a device about the size of smaller than a hockey puck, that sits under the clavicle, under the collarbone. And it's maybe 3 inches across or less, 2.5 inches across. There's a wire that goes under the skin from that device up into the neck where it meets the vagus nerve. And that's what I call the Gen 1 device. Well, in the treatment of epilepsy and depression, that device is firing, sending current 5 minutes a day, 5 minutes on, 5 minutes off, 24 hours a day in a cycle. So it's on all the time. And and the patient is receiving not 400 microamps for 1 minute, which is the current rheumatoid arthritis device, which I call Gen 2, the immunoregulator. It's the patients with epilepsy and depression are receiving between 3 and 5 milliamps. So a log more current at obviously 24 hours a day for a current delivery time of 12 hours a day. So it's a lot more stimulation. Those patients will feel, if they're speaking, because of what we just talked about, if they're speaking when in those 5 minutes when it's on, their voice may vibrate or buzz. Because it's so much current, the current can travel up towards the skin or the muscles of the neck and face, so they can get twitching of their lip sometimes from as a side effect. It's very tolerable. As I said, it's been done millions of times. But with the set point medical immunoregulator device, because it's only going for 1 minute a day at 400 microamps, patients in the clinical trial, most of the patients were treated at 4:30 a.m. Many of the patients slept through it.
Right.
And yeah, so the side effects are not to me the big question going forward. The big question going forward is, can we begin to use this to treat patients earlier and earlier in their course of illness? Right now, the device is going to be prescribed for patients who've tried other things and things aren't going well. And obviously, the question for you would be, can you name a disease where treating late is better than treating early.
No, I don't think so. One of the things, actually, it was at the end, really, of your TED Med talk, and I think you sort of alluded to that, you're thinking, before long, I'm not quite sure what long means in that situation, it depends how fast research goes, there are going to be a whole bunch of diseases that can be potentially treated with a similar sort of process. I mean, it might be stimulating different nerves or in different ways, but you know, you're saying, you know, this is fact already, this is happening already, there are only going to be new things or different diseases that can be treated. Now, your TED talk was a little while ago. Where are we now with sort of looking forward to other diseases that might be treated?
We're at the tipping point, Mike, 100% we're at the tipping point. So that talk was a while ago. And what I was hoping to predict then has now happened. The basic discoveries have been translated into an FDA-approved therapy, which is being deployed. I mean, the product launch is just starting. It hasn't even gone nationwide yet. We implanted the first two patients at my center a couple weeks ago at the Feinstein Institute at Northwell in New York. And we're waiting to see how those patients do, of course. But 80% of the patients in the clinical trial were significantly improved 1 year after their surgery in the clinical trials. So we're at the tipping point, and you're absolutely right. The implications of this, I now predict, if you will, my prediction for today is that this will expand into many other serious chronic inflammatory conditions. And why do I say that? Well, first, scientists hate to make predictions, including me. I hate to make predictions unless I have data. But when you have data, it's not so much a crystal ball prediction, it's a calculation. So if you have a pond covered in pond lilies, and you know the doubling time of a pond lily, and you know the surface area of a pond, you can make pretty accurate, quote unquote, predictions about when the pond will be covered in pond lilies, right? So in this case, we have a therapy that's safe and FDA approved to treat an inflammatory condition that's currently being treated with immunosuppressive drugs like anti-TNF, anti-IL-1, steroids, methotrexate, those kinds of things. Well, there's other conditions that are treated similarly, like inflammatory bowel disease, and the list goes on and on of the steroid treatable conditions. It's a long list of chronic inflammatory conditions. And we have data in the laboratory already and some clinical trial data for many of these conditions, such as multiple sclerosis, where vagus nerve stimulation in the animal models has had a very significant positive effect. So we're just one step away now from moving the question you asked into clinical trials. And is that going to happen? Absolutely, it's going to happen. Set Point Medical will start a clinical trial on multiple sclerosis probably this year. We've already done, we and other groups separate from us have already done clinical trials for Crohn's disease, which is an inflammatory bowel disease, and seen very positive results. There's a lot of excitement and interest in diabetes, which has an inflammatory component that contributes to the insulin resistance, particularly type 2 diabetes. And those clinical trials, there's terrific laboratory results, and the clinical trials, the early clinical trials show hope and promise. The list goes on. And what's important about it, as you know, Mike, is that inflammation either contributes to and sometimes actually causes conditions that account for the death of 2/3 of the people on planet Earth every year. Heart disease, stroke, cancer, metabolic syndrome, diabetes, neurodegeneration, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's. These are the conditions that kill 40 million people on the planet Earth every year. And they all have inflammation has a hand in all of them. So the question's a big question. Do I think vagus nerve stimulation is snake oil and it's going to cure everybody of everything? No, absolutely not. No one's saying that. What we're saying is there's molecular mechanisms and neuroscientific mechanisms that can account for ways of reducing inflammation, damaging inflammation safely without causing immunosuppression. And now we have the opportunity to start to do the clinical testings from some important new questions.
This is fantastic. This is very exciting. And I'll get you back on in a few months' time. But for the time being, I've actually got another question, which maybe I should have asked before that one, sort of looking to the future. This will either demonstrate my complete misunderstanding of everything, or so apologies in advance. But a lot of the treatment for rheumatoid arthritis with drugs, I think you're aimed at controlling TNF, which is something that causes inflammation. So if you control that, that stops inflammation. And that does that have knock-on effects of making people, their immune systems not work quite so well, because you're controlling that side of things. And this vagus nerve stimulation also essentially controls TNF. So they're both sort of doing the same thing. Do they both suffer from a problem of maybe dialing down people's immune systems, or does the vagus nerve stimulation not suffer from that at all?
The vagus nerve stimulation does not suffer from that at all for the following reason. The vagus nerve mechanism is a reflex like the ones we talked about. The inflammatory reflex you mentioned in the beginning is a mechanism of nerve signals traveling up and down the vagus nerve, activated by inflammation. Those signals travel up, and then the signals traveling back down in return suppress the inflammation. Well, that mechanism between the brain and the immune system evolved over millions of years, perhaps hundreds of millions of years. We've seen nerve circuits functioning as inflammatory reflexes in primitive animals like groundworms. So over millions of years of evolution and developmental biology, these mechanisms were honed and refined such that they suppress inflammation without causing immunosuppression. What does that mean? Well, inflammation, when it's excessive, causes severe damage. But you need, inflammation's good for you. You need some amount of inflammation to fight off infection and heal your wounds. And in fact, that's how the inflammatory reflex works. It takes it from very high levels of damaging inflammation down into the healthy range. And that's what evolutionary biology retained for us to have as a protective mechanism. Now, I've had a lot of long conversations with Sir Mark Feldman about this, who won the Lasker Prize with his colleague Tiny Maney for developing monoclonal antibodies for anti-TNF therapy for rheumatoid arthritis and other autoimmune conditions. Now, first, let's say that these drugs have been lifesavers, or at least therapeutically valuable and important in the treating of millions and millions of patients worldwide. I mean, it accounts for a significant percentage of the global pharmaceutical industry's revenue. It's a huge, huge impact of benefit. And that's been great. But as Mark and Tiny laid out in an article some couple of years back, these drugs don't cure the disease. They hide the symptoms. It doesn't work in everybody. It works about half the time. But in the patients that benefit, their joints continue to erode in most of them, even though they makes them feel better. Okay. So the question is, the challenge that Mark and Tiny lay out is, can we invent new therapies? Can we do more by understanding how to not have a trade-off between immunosuppression and benefit in the course of the disease? And that's what the vagus nerve stimulation does. It stimulates an evolutionarily ancient inflammatory reflex that does not cause immunosuppression.
Get evolution on your side.
We got evolution on our side. Well said. I'm going to borrow that line and probably remember to attribute it to you every time, right, Mike?
Thank you. Now, this appears just going to take off big time. You said you're on the cusp of something extraordinary. Would you suggest a young researcher to get into this area? I mean, it sounds fascinating.
Yes, I would, but I don't have to. They're doing it already. We call the area neuroimmunology, and it's probably, or bioelectronic medicine, and it's probably the fastest growing and most exciting field in all of science. I was in a meeting recently in New York City hosted by my colleagues, and it was neuroimmunology was the main topic of the meeting. Normally now these kinds of scientific meetings draw 50 to 100 people, and that's a very successful two-day event. This meeting drew 500 people. The organizers of the meeting, which was organized by Cell, the scientific journal, they were stunned. So, and it was, and you know what I was so happy about, Mike, is it was a room full of young people. I mean, the old professors, we were all there, of course, but it was full of young people, and many, many of them are at early times in their careers have already committed to this path. So, yeah, I think we're at a tipping point, not only for the clinical translation of this science into something that's going to help a lot of people, probably more than we can count in the next 10 years or 20, but we're also at a tipping point in scientific tools. See, we have very powerful tools in immunology and very powerful tools in neuroscience, but we're just beginning to combine them. And that call to action is remarkable, actually.
My daughter is just starting her second year of a biology degree. So I'm going to pass this information on because I know she wants to go into research. If non-scientists...
Good deal. Tell her to check out neuroimmunology.
I certainly will. Yeah, I certainly will. Now, if people are listening to this, non-scientists, and they're thinking, you know, God, this stuff is just fascinating. I want to find out a bit more. Can you think of a good resource? Now, I know you've just written a book. You're probably going to mention that. Do mention that again, but resources in general, where non-scientists can really, you know, get their teeth into this and, you know, read some good stuff about it.
I will mention the book first for a very important reason. The book is written for everybody. When you have a whole new way of thinking about things, everybody has to behave differently. And that requires almost a type of cultural change. I mean, right now we treat these inflammatory conditions with drugs that are invasive. They have to be injected and are very expensive. And we've talked about their side effects, but they're drugs. everybody knows you go to the doctor and you have sick and you get a drug. That's the current workflow. Now we're facing a whole series of new questions. What do you mean I have to see a neurosurgeon? You know, what is the surgery like? The questions you ask me, how does the device work? How big is it? How do you recharge it? And who controls it? And when you have a whole series of new questions, it's not just questions from you on a podcast. It's the patients that have these questions and the doctors and the nurses and everybody else involved, the insurance companies paying the bills. Everybody has questions. So I would start with my book for that reason. I wrote it to answer questions. There's three parts. The first part is a lot of the history and the science for those who are interested. The second part addresses how these devices work and what we know already from clinical trials that they do work. And the third part really looks at all the stuff that's online that we talked about very briefly. Do this, that, or the other thing for your vagus nerve. And I break it down and I break it down into this is why people say that. This is what we know to be true. This is what we know to be false. And this middle ground is areas where there's some really interesting questions, and I am advocating for more study of it. And I have a chapter literally called FAQs because, mm-hmm. you know, the questions are for the patients to ask their doctor, but the answers are for the patients and the doctor.
Excellent. All right. So that's your book. People should go out and buy that and read it. So I think really it just falls for me to say, look, thank you so much for taking this time to chat. Absolutely fascinating. I love talking with you. So thank you so much, Professor Tracy.
Thank you for having me on. And you're right. Happy to come back and follow up in a few months. There may be some more news.
Thank you so much to my guest on this week's show, Professor Kevin Tracy. I absolutely love chatting with him. Thank you to you for listening and have a healthy week until next week.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. Radio. station that makes you feel good.
Thanks for listening to the Relax Back UK show. Join me, Mike Dilk, again next week for more fascinating interviews and chat. If you're listening to the podcast version, please subscribe, like, and share it with your family and friends. And have a healthy week. Until next week.